Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, folks, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios buried deep behind enemy lines here in FEMA Region 3, coming to you from an undisclosed location in a fortified bunker in our grandmother's basement. Nah, just kidding. Folks, we're broadcasting live from the radio and television studios of the Hagman and Hagman Report here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we're heard live weeknights, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network. We're also heard on Blog Talk Radio, that's BTR, as well, and you can see us live on our YouTube channel. Folks, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm, fellow investigator, researcher, most importantly, my son, Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, digging deep into topics that a lot of people don't want to touch. Tonight, we got a great show for you planned. We got, Stan Deo is under the weather tonight, so just say a prayer for him and wish him well. Send him an email telling me I hope he feels better. In place of Stan, actually, I talked to Dave Hodges last night after the program, and we had a pretty lengthy conversation about issues, various things, including Jade Helm 16 and the upcoming civil disturbances expected or perhaps being planned. And before we get into the program tonight, I'd like to remind folks, tonight's broadcast brought to you in part by ProFlowers.com. That's ProFlowers.com, where you can get, well, you can get all set situated for Valentine's Day. If you haven't sent out flowers, hey, don't worry. The pros at ProFlowers.com have you covered. Just go to ProFlowers.com, enter our microphone code Hagman in the microphone box. That's Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N. Real simple. And you hit go, and then bang, it takes you to our little world at ProFlowers, where you can get specials, incredible products. So, also, tonight we're going to be talking about a number of issues, and perhaps even tapping the Hagman and Hagman University College of Knowledge. A little, perhaps a brief look into something that's relevant to tonight. I should also mention portions of the nice broadcast also brought to you by Whole Tones Live. That's WholeTonesLive.com, where you can actually treat yourself, and I mean treat yourself, to some fantastic music that you can use music, the frequencies, special frequencies. You know, doctors have confirmed that WholeTonesLive.com, they're healing music. Healing music reduces anxiety, stress, suicidal thoughts, PTSD, depression, you name it. Walter Reed Medical Center is now testing this on veterans, or our veterans, with this music. Unbelievably great replies, responses. We like it. We play it here in the office. That's WholeTonesLive.com. WholeTonesLive.com. Download there a free sample. You can't go wrong. Joe, welcome to tonight's program. We got a lot to talk about tonight.
Yes, we do. Glad to be here. And as you said, we will have Dave Hodges joining us for hours 2 and 3, as Stan Deo is under the weather. When, again, we do ask for your prayers for him, that his health is resolved. And it's that same issue that was bothering him before, that pain underneath the rib cage. So, seemed to be under control for a while or fixed, and now it is back. So definitely keep him in your prayers. We got a lot to get into tonight. We have updates on the Zika virus. I think we found what the fruit of the Zika virus is in South America. And would it surprise anybody if I told you that abortion was the result of the virus?
Abortion is the result?
Yeah.
How does that work? You mean,
I found an article today. Zika promotes urgent debate about abortion in Latin America. Now, in Latin America...
Social consequence, right, is what you're saying. Is that the social consequence of it's not a... In other words, somebody contracts a Zika virus, they don't automatically have an abortion because of the virus itself. But you're saying
people
are turning to virus or abortion.
Latin America has the strictest abortion laws in the world. So in Latin America now calls to loosen some of the most restrictive abortion laws in the world in the face of the Zika virus outbreak are gaining momentum, but are encountering strong and entrenched opposition. In El Salvador, where abortions are banned under any circumstances, the health minister has argued for revision of the law because of the dangers the virus poses to fetal development. In Colombia, an organized movement to lift restrictions on abortion has gained allies in the government, but has run into determined opposition from religious authorities. The same is happening in Brazil, and some doctors say that as a consequence, illegal back alley abortions are on the rise.
Oh, see, this promotes Roe v. Wade, right?
Mm-hmm. Nearly everywhere in Latin America, including those countries hit hardest by Zika, women who wish to terminate their pregnancies have few legal options. But the UN health officials have projected as many as 4 million infections in the Americas this year. Activists are pressing lawmakers to act as swiftly as possible to ease these rigid restrictions. You know, these anti-abortion extremist Latin Americans.
Wow.
I mean...
Well, yeah. You know, so who didn't see that coming, right?
It's really just sick. I understand that the babies that... And we don't know that this comes from the Zika virus, but there is something going on with babies being born with smaller heads with...
microencephalopathy.
Yeah.
I believe it's
called. And I don't think it's been proven that the Zika virus is directly related to it.
No, actually, drugs. Illegal
pesticides,
drugs.
Yeah, there's a lot of other factors at play here, but... now they're, you know, the World Health Organization, the UN is getting involved, and as again, you know, the strictest abortion laws in the world are now being challenged because of some virus that is being manipulated and hyped up. And I believe, you know, as soon as the abortion laws are lifted, the Zika virus disappears and opening Pandora's box in Latin America.
Man, that's just, so there you have it. Going to be getting obviously into that, and you know, Dave Hodges wrote a couple of articles about the coming civil war and about what's going on. Jade Helm, UX, which is the unconventional warfare exercise taking place, it's now getting started, of course. And in one of his articles, and Joe, we didn't have time before the show to really talk about this, but.
FEMA is beta testing a bank holiday as the economy nears collapse, in one of his articles. I didn't see anything or hear anything about, what was the military exercise? Jade Helm 16?
Well, UWEX, which is an acronym for unconventional war exercise, basically. I mean, wartime war exercise or unconventional warfare.
Don't get me wrong. Maybe I'm just burnt out from the hype of these exercises as we expect things to go live, and maybe that's what they want, is people to get sick and tired of it, so when it does happen it's unexpected.
Well, I think that Jade Helm was a success. I believe that Jade Helm did exactly what they said, right? Or no,
master the human domain.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, there was an immense movement of military assets, a huge movement. Have they come back? I would say
that's been unseen.
I would say there's an argument. Well, you see them going,
but they're ready to start this. In effect, as Dave says, Jade Helm 16.
You got to move assets in order to start.
Explosions in rural neighborhoods in Michigan stopped, and the exercises in the Texas terrains stopped. So did they go away? I don't know, but the exercises have seemed to stop from Jade Helm 15. Although the only suspicious thing to me about it was the amount of coverage about the drills starting than the absolute zero coverage of the drills ending. But
well, right, and I think that it remains to be seen. Everyone who says, well, see, Jade Helm, a big nothing. Oh, wait a minute. First of all, were you read in? You know, those people, and I saw a couple of real, you know, dipwads, if I can use that term. Am I allowed to use that term? I don't know.
I don't
saying,
care.
Well, you know, dipwad, well, Jade Helm, everyone's saying it was going to be this big. Look, we don't know. We weren't read in as to what the exact nature of the drill was, but we do know it's certainly we had military assets on American soil, which I would argue is, no, I don't know if that's consistent with the Constitution.
It's
it?
Not, but it's the status quo now. I mean, it's regular operating procedure.
Well, okay, so are we okay with that?
No, of course not. But what are our options?
Get back to the Constitution. Anyway, hey, if I can take a moment here, I just want to get to, if I can talk about this, and we talk about infiltration. We talk about the infiltration in this government. Do you, can I take a moment, or
oh,
you,
yeah.
you want to get into this?
No,
all right.
Okay.
All right. So if we tap into the vast resources of the Hagman and the Hagman College of Knowledge, if we can go back into the history books here, because this is important. I believe that this is important. You look at what has taken place over the course of the last 100 years. We look at communist infiltration into the United States, and Dave Hodges had mentioned this in one of his articles, the McCarthy era. You know, McCarthy, how many people do you know whose last name has been turned into a verb or an adjective, right? McCarthyism, you know, or to McCarthy someone, McCarthyism, or how many names, last names, surnames, have been turned into an ism? Well, here we go with McCarthyism. And people will hear McCarthy and they'll say, well, that guy was just a whack job, right? He was saying everyone was a communist. And we've seen movies to the effect that just denigrate him and whatever. Well, it's interesting because M. Stanton Evans, this is not a new book. This is an older book, 10 years old, blacklisted by history. An extremely good book that's 500 and some odd pages. It really details a lot of what McCarthy unveiled. And so some of these citations I'm going to make are really from this book. But the interesting part of things here, the interesting and the relevant issues for today is this. If you go back to the summertime, 1946, to be precise, August 3rd, 1946, there was a Department of State official by the name of Samuel Klaus. He wrote a 106-page memo and submitted it to the state. And it discussed or mentioned a number of things, but the number of Soviet agents that were communist agents that were on the payroll at the Department of State. Now, again, we have nothing to do with this book. We don't, you know, blacklisted by history. It's just a resource, and it's a good historical resource. But anyway, the memo by Klaus identified just a number of people, a number of communist infiltrators that were working at the State Department. Now, Hillary wasn't around back in 46 at the State Department, so her name is not on that list. But you might be surprised at how this relates to Hillary. Anyway, and the Department of State, and the Clinton administration, and the Bush administration, to name a few. But think about this. Here's a State Department worker, Samuel Klaus. He says, man, there's a whole lot of bad stuff going on in the State Department. So I'm going to write 106 page report, and I'm going to put it on the internet. No, I'm not. I'm going to keep it off the internet and give it to Congress. All right. So that's what happened. I can't hear my, oh, there we go. All right. I just knocked the connection loose. Anyway, in this particular memo, he named 33 people. Interesting number. The names, one being Alger Hiss, these were actually a compilation of the various names within the State Department, but as being suspects and sympathizers for the Communist Party. The 33 individuals were on top of more than 90 staffers that were being assembled at the time the memo was written. So, anyway, this was like a super secret memo that's called the Klaus, K-L-A-U-S memo. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. And once more, this is where everyone's got to understand that, you know, you can send out a Freedom of Information Act request, Is it good? Are you going to pick something up? Perhaps. Should you bet the ranch on it? No. Are records expunged? Absolutely. And I'll tell you how, and I'll tell you why. What the Klaus memo did, the Klaus report did, was it spawned both a Senate inquiry and ultimately a House Un-American Activities Committee investigation. Now, they're two separate things. They're two separate bodies. The Senate investigation, started by Joe McCarthy, and the House. Okay, two separate entities. And people always get them, conflate the two. Two separate things. Joe McCarthy, the senator at the time from Wisconsin, learned about this memo. He started up this major investigation. And thanks to McCarthy himself, a Senate subcommittee chaired by Senator Millard Tidings from Maryland requested a copy of that memo and got one. Then what happened from there, one of the most revealing documents ever compiled about communist infiltration inside the U.S. government was supplied to Congress. But here's the problem. The Klaus memo vanished. Okay? Now, written by M. Stanton Evans, who, during the research for this book, he writes this, and this is where I'll cite from this book. In the National Archives, the U.S. National Archives, there should be at least two places where this report should be on hand, be on file. One is the legislative archive of the Tidings Panel, which received and weighed McCarthy's charges of State Department security breakdown, which they got a copy. Okay, now this is reflected in the department's letter of transmittal, which survives and is included in the subcommittee record. So the memo should be in the files of the National Archives, but guess what, folks? It's not. Even today, it's not. Now, the other place this memo should be would be in the papers of Sam Klaus himself, held in another section of the archives. In the index to the Klaus papers, the document is listed under its proper official heading. However, when the file was examined by Evans when he was writing this book, the report was missing. Now, here's where it gets really kind of screwy. The file contained a notice where the memo had been, saying it was withdrawn from the archives. You want to take a guess when it was withdrawn? Was it 1940? Because this memo was written in 1946, August 3rd. Any takers? No? 1993. March of 1993, it was withdrawn. Now, think about that for a second. All right, March of 1993, nearly a half a century after the investigation, this super secret, memo disappeared. Klaus memo disappeared. All right, so this is not the only memo. This is not the only document that disappeared. Many Cold War papers have gone missing. Many investigative reports have gone missing, many from the archives. Now, this is not an indictment of those taking care of the National Archives. No. This is an indictment of those people who have access to the archives and who have removed documents. Now, why in 1993? Why in the world would this document be taken in 1993 in March? Who was in office in March of 1993?
Clinton.
Yeah. Gone. Gone from the papers. As is other historical data that ought to be in subcommittee records. By the way, there's a McCarthy to Tidings letter, March 18th, 1950. This listed the names of some 80 security risks at the Department of State and elsewhere. Yeah. Missing. A number of other documents as well, investigative documents missing. When? Don't know. But as these reports and papers and memos were part of official proceedings of the Senate, and as we know from other sources, they were in fact provided, they should be at least be in the archive. They're not. Diligent searches have revealed all of them are missing with no explanation of what happened to them, no hint that they were ever there, no withdrawal notice, just gone, period, poof, gone. That's it. So don't tell me that a record request is going to bear fruit 100% of the time. This is not an indictment of the FOA process. This is just mere. This is to tell you how incestuous and how infiltrated this country is. This is to tell you why we need background investigations and background information on the people running things. This is to tell you that this communist infiltration and now Islamic communist infiltration is a real thing. It's dedicated to take this country down, in addition to other things, but this is a real thing. Yet McCarthyism is looked upon as some sort of smokescreen. McCarthy was right. He might not have been a. I mean, he. Who was that baseball player that was always a drunk? You know, that Hall of Famer. But he was a drunk and he's really caustic.
Yeah, Mattingly, Don Mattingly.
No, before that, like back in the day, in the 20s or 30s. When anyway, you get the.
Oh, I was only like 7 then.
Right. Okay. But I guess what I'm saying is, he was more of a hero that had a lot of personal issues. But do we shoot the messenger because of that? No. No, I mean he might have been abusive and a drunk maybe. I don't know. I mean, but you know he's got some personal baggage to go around. But I guess what I'm saying is, he pointed this out, and yet he's vilified today. His name is vilified today. Now, the point of this is not to rehabilitate the image of Joe McCarthy. No, the point of this is to tell you exactly how long this infiltration has been taking place, and how bad and how deep we're infiltrated, and even today. Some 20 years after the removal from the archives of that Klaus memo, how far into, you know, how pervasive this is. So think of that. 1950, or 1946, August 3rd, Klaus memo, 106-page memo report, gone from the archives in 1993. What the heck's going on? Now, here's another thing, too. I'm going to get back to that in a second. And again, we're extending the College of Knowledge, if you will. How many people have heard of Annie Lee Moss?
Nope.
Show of hands. Show of hands in our vast studio audience there.
Nobody.
Nobody. I don't see anyone out there in the studio audience who's heard of Annie Lee Moss. Well,
I don't think anybody showed up
no.
for our studio audience.
Well, wait a minute. We have a couple of... No, I guess not. Looking at over the chairs, empty studio again tonight.
Huh. Not even a cat or a dog.
Well, you see any cats, we got a problem. The dog should be here in the office anyway. All right. Annie Lee Moss is kind of an interesting figure. You might remember. I mean, how many remember if that doesn't ring a bell to you? There she is. For those people watching on YouTube, there's her picture right on YouTube. Her name is Annie Lee Moss. Well, you check out Wikipedia, okay? And you'll find a little bit of information about Annie Lee Moss. In fact, even better than that, George Clooney. How many people know George Clooney? Show of hands. Everyone heard of George Clooney, but interestingly, no one in our studio audience heard of Annie Lee Moss. Well, Annie Lee Moss was the subject of a film by George Clooney in 2005. And this film, I'm not sure how many people saw this or really cared, George Clooney. This film was, I had it right here in my notes. Hang on a minute. Good Night and Good Luck. This was based on the show by Edward R. Murrow. The title of the film is taken from Murrow's habitual sign-off on his radio program. Now, you might know or hear the name Edward R. Murrow back as a radio talk radio host and political commentator that he was. But let's get back to Annie Lee Moss. Who was this Annie Lee Moss, or who was she? Well, she was a black woman that worked for the Department of State. But it was really weird because she worked at a cafeteria and in civil service back in the early 40s, back in the 40s, and somehow, some way, managed to get this job at the Signal Corps for the Department of the Army, which held a certain level of classification. Okay? So, kind of like Obama's meteoric rise, Annie Lee Moss suddenly rose to fame. All right. As a Signal Corps operator for the Department of War, actually. as it was called back then. Not Department of Defense, Department of War. Well, enter a woman by the name of Mary Markward. M-A-R-K-W-A-R-D. Markward. Mary Markward. Now, Mary Markward ran a beauty salon in D.C. And she also was an FBI informant. Markward, working on behalf of the FBI, turned over at the same time, concurrent with the McCarthy hearings and the House Un-American Activities Committee, turned over the names, numerous names of individuals who were communist infiltrators in the government. For this, she was called Looney Tunes and said, you know, unreliable, and she was pretty well toasted by the press and by people and by actors and by Hollywood. Well, in fact, even to this day, or at least 2005, Hollywood and George Clooney want to tell the story that Markward was kind of a loon. He couldn't be trusted. The information couldn't be trusted. As evidenced by that film I mentioned, by that was consistent with Edward R. Murrow's program, talk show. Again, titled, in 2005, titled Good Night and Good Luck. So, bottom line is this. Annie Lee Moss, out of nowhere, Signal Corps, now working for the Department of War, making $3,350 per year as a Signal Corps. Pretty good money back then. Okay. I ID'd, fingered by Mary Markward as a communist infiltrator in the War Department. Dragged to a hearing. Said, okay, you're gonna go to a hearing before Congress, congressional committee, kind of like today. So here we have poor little old Annie Lee Moss, and we'll put her picture back up if we can on the screen. Getting picked on, testifying before the committee. And it's interesting because Annie Lee Moss, what happened here was she said, look, you know, there are three, count them, three Annie Lee Mosses living in D.C. And the Annie Lee Moss you're talking about is not me. Well, this is before the internet. This is before Google Earth. This is before Streets, you know, Google Streets and whatever. So, oh, okay. See, Annie Lee Moss said, no, I'm not receiving copies of the Daily Worker. In fact, this is a case of mistaken identity. So now, enter Stuart Symington. Stuart Symington was a senator that was actually taking part in the case of Annie Lee Moss, and he was asking questions of her. Annie Lee Moss appeared in front of the committee on March 11th, 1945, I believe it was. Let me just check. Yeah. And she said, no, I never received copies. In fact, I was never a member of the Communist Party. I never received copies of the Daily Worker. This isn't me. This is a case of mistaken identity. Well, Stuart Symington said, and I'm going to read you the exchange from the committee. I'm going to read when Annie Lee Moss was being questioned by Stuart Symington. Here's the exchange. It's brief. Symington, do you know anybody else in town named Moss? Have you ever looked up a telephone number? Are there many or any Mosses in Washington besides you? Annie Lee Moss says, well, yes, sir, there are three Annie Lee Mosses. Jackson, another committee member questioning. Will you state that again, Moss? Yeah, there are three Annie Lee Mosses. All right. The responses were apparently all the proof that was required in certain venues to reach a verdict of not guilty, which for the verdict was no, not guilty. No. This, we must have the wrong one. And Symington said this after Annie Lee Moss was terminated under suspicion of being a communist plant. Symington said this, I want to say something to you, and I might be sticking my neck out here, and I might be wrong, But I have been listening to you testify this afternoon, and I think you are telling the truth. If you're not taken back into the Army, employment, that is, you can come around to see me, and I'm going to see that you get a job. Well, how do you think the rest of the committee and others in attendance there responded to this? Resounding, sustained applause. Okay? Well, Symington took to the airwaves with Edward R. Murrow, CBS, on this TV show, See It Now. He reinforced the image that there was grievous wrong done to this poor lady, that the case of mistaken identity. All the while, an FBI memo dated February 24th, 1954, dated February 24th. Did I say 1945? I didn't mean that. I meant 1954. I must be dyslexic here. In the hearing date was April or 1954. But see, a month before that hearing day, a month before she said, "No, this is a case of mistaken identity." An FBI report was distributed to the committee members saying that there's no mistaken identity. We have the right, Annie Lee Moss. Even before it was brought up, we have the right Annie Lee Moss. The bottom line was this. Symington never admitted he was wrong. The others never admitted they were wrong. Annie Lee Moss was never called back, never prosecuted for contempt or for perjury, because she did testify under oath. And she lied. And she even admitted that fact, that she was getting the daily worker, but that was in subsequent testimony. See, she was lying when she said, "Oh, no, you got the wrong person." And even additionally, the author, M. Stanton Evans, and when he was doing research for his book, well, I'm sorry, before, back, he, in fact, he's an older gentleman. He was a reporter, cub reporter back then. He actually, then and now, had verified that Annie Lee Moss was the right person. Two more things. So, Annie Lee Moss died in 1990, and always viewed the victim. In fact, she was the poster child for McCarthyism. Now, 2005, George Clooney stars in the film Good Night and Good Luck, based on the confrontation between McCarthy and Edward R. Murrow about Annie Lee Moss. Clooney portrays McCarthy as a fearsome, this Clooney work, and portrays McCarthy as a fearsome dragon, and Murrow as this brave knight who dared to slam. You see, in a mix of modern production methods and video clips taken from the archives, the movie affects to be a study in this cinematic reality, supposedly revealing the evil of McCarthy simply by showing him in action. The case of Annie Lee Moss is featured prominently, as it was by Murrow himself back in the 50s. It's of interest that neither in the Clooney film nor in the original Murrow broadcast there's any evidence cited to indicate Moss was an innocent victim. No. Instead, it was otherwise. And in the case of the Murrow broadcast back in the day, when not all of the relevant data was known publicly, this was to some, well, I guess it was excusable. They didn't have the internet back then. Didn't have a lot of things back then, including truth. But in the case of the Clooney film, there's no excuse whatsoever. The truth about this case is fully available to anyone who bothers to review the voluminous open source reports and the archives of the Bureau. Look, folks, but here's how the infiltration works. Hollywood, 2005. She's a victim. The McCarthy was a bad guy. Red Scare. Murrow, good guy. Edward R. Murrow referencing. And what is happening today, and the reason this is important is because, and how this is relevant, what's happening in our State Department? What's happening in our alternative or new media? What's happening with the with the mainstream corporate media. What's happening with Hollywood? Hollywood is sending us messages. They are giving us news through their entertainment, but they're giving us revisionist history. This is all part of it. But even for the last century, the State Department and the various departments of the Army have been infiltrated by communist plants, now Islamic plants. You don't think this is possible? I just gave you I just gave you not only a case that was, what, 60 years old, the fact that McCarthy was in fact correct, but also the fact that the records are being tampered with even in modern day, as back in the 90s. Why? To change the narrative? Yeah. But there's more. You see, there's more to this. They don't want you to know how captured this country is. They don't want you to know that, yeah, there could be, there are desertions in the Army. There are events taking place. There is infiltration throughout the ranks of the government. And it's at the very highest levels. So the bottom line, folks, is, go on Wikipedia. Look at, and the Senate historian. Oh, yeah. Go ahead and type in Wikipedia, historian for the McCarthy hearings. Go ahead. In fact, if you go on Wikipedia right now and type in Annie Lee Moss or McCarthy hearings, let me just do that right this second. And you'll get, by the way, the McCarthyism and such, but if you type in McCarthy hearings and look it up in Wikipedia, you'll see all sorts of information. And coming from this information is the Senate historian. Or the Senate historian is providing a lot of this information. Pretty interesting when you take a look and you investigate a little bit further that the Senate historian is not acting just as an archivist. No. He didn't act just as an archivist for the hearing results. No. He also acted as basically judge, jury, and editor of what got in and what got out. In my view, this is a personal assessment based on my research now. So to change the narrative is to control one person, right? Or to influence one person. That's my view. Again, this is all personal viewpoints based on my research. Are we getting the truth? No. So those people who are out there saying, oh, wait, this is all hype, this is all BS, well, I just showed you how the narrative can be changed, how the story can be changed. In fact, how Hollywood just is pushing a false narrative, how history books are being written and not containing the truth. And once you know that the truth is not, that we're not getting the truth, once you can establish this with certainty, once you know that records have been removed from the archives, once you know that we are so messed up in this country and have the proof for it and have people writing books like this, 500 pages, of course, many people, they don't want to read this. They don't want to follow the documentation in this. You see, once you know, you can't unknow it. Yeah, we're taken over. We're captured from within. And this is why the BS about Obama, about his background, about his meteoric rise, inexplicable meteoric rise, and this is why the Cruises and the others, anyone who shuts down, who says, no, I'm going to shut down my medical records, I'm going to shut down my transcripts, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, shut it all down. Because that's private. No, there's something wrong here. There's something really wrong. And those people who facilitate that or to perpetuate that it's okay to do that, yeah, you better question their motives as well. And that concludes the Hagman and Hagman College of Knowledge look back at history and how it applies today.
All right. Well, we have about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. So let's hit a few news items until we are joined by Mr. Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show on the other side. I don't know how many people saw this today. Bayer, of Bayer Aspirin. And the U.S. government knowingly gave HIV to thousands of children. This is an important story. What if a company that you thought you could trust knowingly sold you a medicine for your child that they knew had the potential to give your child HIV? How would you react? What if the government agency that claims the responsibility for protecting you from such treachery not only looked the other way, but was complicit in the exchange? Everyone has heard of Bayer Aspirin. It is a household name. Bayer AG also manufactures numerous other projects, from pesticides to medicines. And in 1984, Bayer became aware that several batches of this Factor VIII contained HIV. They knew this because there was an outbreak of HIV among hemophiliac children, and this outbreak was traced back to Bayer. It goes on to say that, unable to sell their Factor VIII to the U.S., Bayer and the FDA, with the FDA's permission, yeah, that's right, the FDA allowed Bayer to infect thousands of people, sold this HIV-infected medicine to Argentina, Indonesia, Japan, Malaysia, Singapore. After February 1984, according to documents obtained by the New York Times, the documents show how Cutter Biological, a division of Bayer, shipped more than 100,000 vials of unheated concentrate worth more than $4 million after it began selling the safer product. The result of this sale of HIV-tainted medication ended up infecting tens of thousands and killing thousands. Thousands of innocent children and adults have died at the hands of this corporation, and no punitive action has ever been taken against them. The health department leaders in Argentina, Indonesia, Japan, Malaysia, and Singapore were all imprisoned, while the FDA in the U.S. continues down its hellish path. And many people are familiar with Bayer and the connection to IB Farben in Germany, Germany.
Yeah.
But this is just an article that, I mean, this isn't new news, but this is something that I thought was very important, as we see today that there, there was 40,000, I remember Hillary Clinton apologizing to 40,000 people in Portugal, I believe it was. It was a Latin American country for infecting 40,000 people with syphilis, the syphilis STD, while giving out polio vaccines.
Whoops.
This
Sorry
is a
about
pattern
that.
of
Can you imagine going home to your wife? Hey, honey, I got syphilis. I got it from a vaccine. Honest, I did. Yeah, sure. No, it was from the toilet, either from the toilet seat or from a vaccine. Well, there you go.
In other news, this is interesting. This is from earlier today. Fox News reports Trump wins New Hampshire. Donald Trump won the New Hampshire primary Tuesday, according to a premature Fox News report, Politico reports. And it goes on to say, citing every precinct reporting, Fox News website accidentally published the election results during the Trump, as Trump with the winner of 28%.
Another whoopsies. Oh, man, now, I'm sorry. We didn't mean to publish those reports before. Just like Building 7, right?
You know why I thought they did this?
Why?
To urge Trump supporters to stay home?
Oh, I wouldn't. Why not? I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, the motive, yeah, sure. But the fact that now I understand. People will say, well, they were just getting the numbers ready, you know, getting all, kind of like, did you know, and I hope everyone knows this, celebrities. If you're a celebrity out there, the major rags, the various, even New York Times and some of the more larger publications, they already have your obituary written. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Without the end date. So, okay, so this is kind of like, you know, it would be like, whoops, we accidentally published your obituary online. We were just testing out the information, making sure the information was kind of, you know, playable, and we didn't really mean to publish it. Sorry about that. Kind of same thing. Right? So, mm-hmm. You know, it's just, sorry, you know, we didn't mean to inconvenience any voters.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we know. Look, Sanders, do you think Sanders has got a chance? Not that we want him to.
In New Hampshire, he's going to win.
But you go south of the Mason-Dixon line, I don't think Sanders has got a chance. Now he
what
might,
if he, he I don't think he's got a chance. Confederate flag?
Yeah, well, totally antithetical to his position. And it sounds like he should, right? But no. They're not going to take it. Anyway, he's not going to take it. And I for whatever reason, I just have this really funny feeling if we have an election, because who knows? I don't know. I mean, we've had them every 4 years. They've been more selection processes than elections. But I just think it's going to be Clinton and Bush, because there's enough information out there right now to indict Hillary Clinton, but there's enough information out there with any number of scandals. They haven't indicted her. The Justice Department, no. And you know what? Holder, found to be in contempt of Congress, hasn't been indicted or hasn't been punished for that.
No.
So, does it matter? I mean, everything's screwed. When I pardon that term, but aren't we? Wow. So, okay. It's really. I just think that Bush somehow is going to get weaseled in there. Perhaps, you know, could a convention be brokered? Sure. Could there be a revolt in the Republican Party more than what there is? Sure. Could there be? Or could it be Trump? I mean, or could Trump be pushed out by the Karl Rovian politics and, Bush be in there? Yeah, absolutely. But the bottom line, yeah, it's, doesn't matter, because I do believe that Clinton may in fact be on the other side of this.
Here's an interesting story. House Democrat. U.S. Muslims are being radicalized by politicians calling for border control.
Yeah, there are the problems.
Kirk responds, maybe I was responsible for Pearl Harbor, too. Illinois Senate Democrat candidate Representative Tammy Duckworth said on Monday that politicians are contributing to the rise of Islamic terrorism in the United States by calling for stricter immigration laws.
Yeah. What?
I just wanted to reread that in my head to make sure.
Say what?
Okay, an Illinois Democratic Senate candidate, Representative Tammy Duckworth.
Yeah, I think I heard you, but go ahead and repeat that anyway.
Said that politicians are contributing to the rise of Islamic terrorists in the United States because they're calling for stricter immigration laws. So for calling for enforcement of the law, we are creating extremists. Duckworth singled out her Republican opponent, Senator Mark Kirk, and presidential candidate Donald Trump as two politicians who are allegedly playing right into ISIS's hands by aiding the radicalization of Muslims in the United States during an interview with the Chicago Tribune, the editorial board. Duckworth made the comments while discussing two Iraqi refugees in Texas and California who were recently arrested on terror-related charges. In the case of these two young people, the Iraqi refugees in Texas, they came to the United States as teenagers, said Duckworth.
Yep.
They were radicalized because they've been on these talk hotlines with ISIS because they see people like Mark Kirk demonizing Muslims and Islam and wanting to shut down our borders. And that's how we turn people against us. We play right into ISIS's hands.
There you go. So, problem solved. Now we can't talk about them. Okay, you see the bigger picture.
Tried to walk back her comments when pressed by the editorial board. I'm sorry, you think that they were radicalized by U.S. politicians? Said a member of the Chicago Tribune. No, I think they were radicalized by ISIS, who are attempting to get U.S. politicians and the United States to react in fear, Duckworth said. And we can't react in fear. We can't go against our values. We have to guard against that. So we can't go against our values? Well, then why are we destroying every single law, bending over backwards to conform for what these people want to do? If we stick to our values, that means we stick to our laws, which means we stick to our immigration policies and enforce them.
You think?
I mean...
But
I can't even draw an analogy that is worthy. It is all a game.
I mean,
that's like saying, you know, having a Bible in every hotel room is leading to, I don't have a proper analogy.
Well, I think that the Bible in a hotel room is not that far off. I mean, the cause of the chain of causation, if you will, you know, I'm sure Bibles do save, in a hotel room, save some people, okay, left there. I'm sure there have been cases where somebody picked up a Bible and got saved. So that's a good thing. Better than a Quran in there, okay?
Mickey Weinstein has his way. There won't be any Bibles in hotel rooms.
Of course not. Anywhere. Anywhere.
Right. Right.
Well, all right.
Only Baphomet statues and satanic ceremonies on the courthouse steps.
There you go. And this is, but see, take a few steps back and take a look at the entire landscape. And this is what we're doing from a view upward, cruising altitude. Look at everything, and the narrative, what they are doing. When I say they, I'm talking about the power brokers. They're convincing us that number one, they're convincing us that the problems that we are experiencing are not from what we think they are. I mean, it's not the alien invasion. No, it's people are talking about the alien invasion. It's up down. Everything is a duality of lies.
You've heard of white guilt, obviously. We're going to start hearing about American guilt.
Of course. We already have, pretty much, but yes.
And then, Muslim guilt. And, I mean, they're out of their mind. I mean, these people are literally out of their mind. And what makes it even worse is that the American public is so far out of their mind that these politicians and lawmakers, being out of their mind and completely insane, putting forth these insane opinions and policies, and the American public doesn't blink an eye. Like it never happened, or they didn't hear it properly.
Well,
it's like they're already dead.
Of course. This is why we've driven home conversations about the Tavistock Institute. This gives us a chance now to tell you, okay, this is why the groundwork has been laid for this programming. You're not going to hear Rush Limbaugh. You're not going to hear Sean Hannity. You're not going to hear Savage Savage might, but Glenn Beck now.
Savage is on the right side.
Right, but I'm talking about the Tavistock. You're not going to hear them talk about the Tavistock Institute. We talk about it because we give you a venue, kind of an overview of how that Tavistock mentality is changing our entire perception. Perception becomes reality, TV show Lucifer. It's this assault on our senses and this captivation of our perception and molding of our perception that is really going forward. It's amazing. I find this amazing too. Today, the young people ask for a telephone directory. How many young people even use phone books anymore? Try to find a payphone. And you can't do it.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Why do I include
that?
We
noticed that like around the 2006, right. 2007, 2008. We used to use payphones very frequently as in Prime Investigators. It was a great way to make anonymous phone calls.
Or just bug your wife or girlfriend.
And it got to a point, I remember in Buffalo, we drove around 4 miles stopping at different shopping plazas and we could not find one payphone.
Yeah, exactly. And I had to do an interview with a radio station and I had to do a landline interview. I didn't have anything. So, yeah, well, go figure. But see, the attempts to limit our conversation to less than 140 characters, it's not only the dumbing down of the citizens. It's changing our way of living now. We are substituting knowledge for, what are we substituting knowledge for? Knowledge for entertainment, I suppose.
For stupidity.
We're substituting security for convenience, or swapping out security for convenience. We're saying, well, we don't need those rights. It's more convenient to have it done this way.
We really have a brainwashed civilization, especially here in America.
Oh, of course.
90 to 95% of our population have actual visual sight, but are blind completely. They can hear, but they are deaf. They are walking dead souls.
Yep.
With no spiritual value, no understanding of their spiritual nature or origins. Thinking that this fleshly body in this temporary world is all there is, and that's all they care about.
You know, if I can make one request to the people out there, especially if you're homeschooling, if you're homeschooling, you probably already do this, but if I can make one request, I would request that if you've got children, have them learn to write, and I mean write with a pen and a paper. Not type. I mean, typing is good, but have them learn to write. Write in cursive. Write in.
Did you see that study and with the social media? I forget what grades it was, but under fourth, there's certain age brackets couldn't write their own name. because of the use of computers. You're on to something there. You got to finish that file on the other side.
I'd be in trouble because I'd forget my address. And my, you know, I have to write my name and address on my coat or my underwear. And that's the only way I can find my way home. All right.
We'll be back with Dave Hodges on the other side of this. Hagman and Hagman Report. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.